This is Tuesday, July the 18th, 1989. I'm Francis Durham. I'm a part of the North Hill Oral Histories Project. I'm in the home of Mr. Charles Ely Sr., who has lived in North Hill for a great number of years. We're going to go into more detail about that, and he's going to be granting an interview this morning. Just for checking the volume, Mr. Ely, tell me where you were born and how large your family was, and a little background.
Born June the 7th, 1910. I have a sister and a brother. My sister is still alive.
Uh-huh.
Buried Harold Boone.
Uh-huh.
1941, I think.
Uh-huh. Okay. Your sister's name was Ada.
Ada.
Uh-huh. And then you had a brother, Ivan. Okay. Okay, let's turn this tape off now and see how the volume sounds. Okay, the tape is back on and we're going to continue the interview. I see from the biography that Mr. Ely filled out that you were born in Farmington. Now, was this at that time? And you were born in 1910, so that means you're 79 years old. Was this a farm that you grew up on in Farmington, or was it in the village of Farmington, or just what kind of a home did you grow up in?
My father graduated from MAC, I think it was 1903, and he came home. I suppose my grandfather was all smiles, thinking that here his son was going to come home, take care of things. That farm was on between Farmington and Orchard Lake Road, between Shiawassee and 10 Mile Road. Well, that didn't last long. The first thing you know, my dad came in one day, as I recall, or have heard, said, well, he'd bought his own farm down at 8 Mile and Farmington Road. I suppose that was quite a shock to my granddad. Well, my dad didn't like farming. The first thing you know, he went to town and bought a blacksmith shop on Grand River, just west of Farmington Road, on Grand River. It wasn't long before he bought another one just south of Grand River on Farmington Road. Actually, the two blacksmith shops backed up to each other. Well, it wasn't long before a fellow by the name of Henry Ford came out, and I can remember old Henry. He was kind of a tall gangershank guy. He always had a derby hat on, and I'm positive that it had to be Edsel that was along with him. And he drove his own car and sold my dad on the idea of selling Ford cars. So it wasn't long before typical Ford policy, he talked my dad into buying another blacksmith shop down east of the Farmington and Farmington Road on Grand River. That building is still there. Well, so is the one on west of Farmington Road, still there. Then it was more or less of a driveway for all of northwestern part of Michigan, because I had an uncle with three or four other men would take the streetcar every day down to Highland Park and bring back Ford cars. And people from, as I say, northwestern Michigan would just come to Farmington and pick up their Fords. How much he made, I have no recollection. But in 1917 or 18, a fellow by the name of Olin Green, and I can remember my dad saying, well, what the hell difference does it make? Sell one Ford or the whole damn business. And he sold it all and had about $75,000 in cash money and a wife and three kids. And he moved to Florida. So, the first year we lived in I forget the name of that. Of course, now where we lived is right slam bang in the middle of Miami, but in those days it was outside of town. So the first year we came back, a fellow by the name of Emery Reynos died long in the summertime, and here that farm was 32 acres where the Saratoga Trunk restaurant was. It was 16 acres on each side of the road. Well, my dad and my grandfather Roberts, my mother's father, here are a couple old farmers. They really had fun on that little garden patch. And I got to rest now for a while.
That's okay. Let's turn this off for a moment. Okay, we've turned the tape back on, and I was asking Mr. Ely, while the tape was off, he mentioned that his father had graduated from MAC, which was Michigan Agriculture College, or what is now known as Michigan State. And I was also asking him how his father happened to get into the blacksmithing business, because he told me that at MAC he majored in animals, particularly horses?
Sheep.
Cows and sheep. Okay. So, but yet he ended up buying a couple of blacksmith shops and then eventually went to work for Henry Ford. Did he do the blacksmithing himself?
Oh, no. he didn't. He could always hire somebody to do those things. Well, as I say, then he sold out, moved to Florida. The first year he came back, he bought this farm where Saratoga Trunk. The next year, when we came back, the men had separated the money from the boys, pretty much. So, there used to be an old interurban, two ways to get to Norfolk from Detroit. One came out Michigan Avenue through Wayne, Dearborn, Plymouth to Norfolk. The other line, came out Grand River to Farmington to out 8 Mile Road to Norfolk. Down at the corner of Grizzled and Main Street was what they called a Y. And the streetcars would come there and back uptown. And right in the middle of center in Main Street was what they called a crow's nest. All summer, the band would play there for 3-4 hours. And I really don't know for sure, but the stores would all be open till 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. And I'll bet you there was 1,000 to 2,000 people standing on the streets on a Saturday night listening to the band to play. Did you ever hear that
before? I've heard that story before. Yeah, the Saturday night was a big shopping night.
Oh, yeah. It's a crying shame that there isn't something like that nowadays.
Yeah. I think the closest thing is the band concerts are held on Friday nights in the band shell. So,
well, they are.
It's not like what it used to be.
No. And the stores would be open. That was the main thing.
Yeah.
How much business they did, I don't know.
Yeah.
So, what are we talking about now?
Okay. Well, I was talking, just asking you briefly about how your dad went from farming
and, oh, yeah,
blacksmithing, and you said he really didn't like farming all that much.
So, this, as I say, the second year we come from Florida, the men had separated the boys with their money, and we came out the Michigan Avenue and wanted to take the streetcar to Farmington. There'd be a car ever half hour from, I guess from 6 o'clock in the morning till midnight, maybe longer than that. But anyway, that winter, one of his drinking pals, Claude McCann, had died of the flu and went in to see the widow. And she said, "Carl, why don't you buy me out?" And that little store office was there next to Strader's funeral furniture store.
Uh-huh.
Just a little building. There was the DUR waiting room. And then...
DUR being Detroit Urban Railway.
That's right.
Right, okay.
That's right.
Right.
That's the name of it, DUR.
Right.
And there was a DUR waiting room. Then there was a tire store. And then, of course, Jim Huff's corner building. So he said, "Who's handling?" Well, it was Lovell and Smith. And I remember watching my dad go across the street to the real estate office, which now is a shoe repair store. And then pretty soon, in back the streetcar, and saw my dad wave to Bill Elliott, the conductor,
right,
that he'd get his folks to hold the streetcar. I said to my mother, "Here he comes." So we were all ready when he come over. He said, "Well, I've bought it. I'll be over in the morning and straighten up." So here he, but this day, now he's in the coal and ice business. He didn't know anything about that either.
Okay, so this friend of your dad's was in the coal and ice business, and then the widow said, "Why don't you buy me out?" So
that's right.
That was the coal and ice business.
That's right.
Okay. Okay.
Well.
And his name was what?
Claude McCann.
Claude McCann, okay.
And Vance, his daughter, is still alive.
I've heard that name, yeah.
And I just don't know where she advances at.
Yeah.
But that's something else.
Uh-huh.
So, but he kept on wheeling and dealing. And by 1930, he was just about all done, being forced into bankruptcy. He couldn't pay his bills. And so that's when he took my brother and I into partners with him. And, yeah. I got to rest of all now.
Okay, let's turn this off. Okay, I was asking Mr. Ely while the tape was off, how the family happened to leave Farmington. Well, and what he told me was is your dad sold out your business, the Ford business, and decided to move to Florida. And you lived in the Miami area. You were down there for what, about a year?
Well, two winters.
Two winters. Okay. Then decided to come back up to Michigan.
I really don't know what he had in mind.
Yeah.
But I do know that coming out the DUR, they had to stop in Norfolk, and that's when he went to see this widow of the man that had died that previous winter.
Who was a friend of his.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And bought the coal and ice business.
Okay.
Our home was in over there, just in that place just east of Novi on uh-huh. Grand River.
Uh-huh.
First, then he built a house here in Norfolk. A brick house at the corner of Thayer and Roger Street. 290 uh-huh. was that address. Geez, that's been a long time ago. Well, the house is all paid for, but he kept getting in big deals that went flat. And by 1930, he'd borrowed $3,500 on this house, which eventually he couldn't pay, so they lost it.
Uh-huh.
There was a question of saving the business or saving this house. Well, the house was no good with no business, so what resources he did have, he put in towards his business.
Uh-huh.
And then he took my brother and I in partners. Here we were just a couple of kids. I don't know why he took us in partners with a business that was going to go bankrupt. But this is about 1932. And in 3 years' time, we had everything all paid up, which nowadays is not very much money, but it was right around $20,000 that he actually owed. And that's, I was through with Ferris by that time. And just, and then in 1940, much to my brother and I discussed. Well, incidentally, in 1931, he'd sold 30 cars of coal that previous year, which wasn't very much. But in 1940, we'd increased that up to 250 cars a year. He sure had a fabulous insight or something, because our coal yards wouldn't hold only about 20 cars of coal. That's all it could stock. There wasn't room for any more than that. And we had equipment and machinery. And we actually hauled more coal from May to October than we did from October to May. Huh. As I look back now, we originated the balance payment plan. We had people that paid us money year round. We'd fill their coal bin, and they pay so much a month. And production would be a lot better than in the summertime than it would be in the wintertime when there was snow and ice on the ground.
Sure.
So a big success of that coal business was an old guy by the name of Oscar, a good Irishman by the name of Oscar Sulkowski.
Irishman.
But anybody lived in Northville remembers old Oscar, because he took pride in workmanship. Boy, when he got a complaint, old Oscar he'd be in the dumpster for 2 weeks. And then, but long in that time, our dad decided to go into the fuel oil business. Well, he said, you notice boys, new houses, they're not putting in coal. So, much against our better judgment, my brother and I, He went into the fuel oil business. Well, I've often thought that if my dad had run the country, instead of a lot of people, the country would have been in a lot better shape.
Mm-hmm. He had a lot of foresight then.
He sure did had a lot of foresight.
Yeah.
In 1920, the ice was all put up at that time. And that that building is where the Historical Society is.
Uh-huh.
The next year, there wasn't any ice produced or raised on the mill pond there until long, I think it was later part of March. And it only made 4-inch ice. And it just wasn't enough. So he had to buy ice from Detroit City Ice and Fuel Company. And it was a terrible time. So he built a ice plant in back of, I forget now what's in that building now. It's right next to the Cloverdale.
Yeah, Cloverdale Farms.
Yeah.
There's an unfinished furniture place there, right over there next door to your place there. I've forgotten the name of it, but they have unfinished furniture.
Oh, not that place.
Oh,
I'm talking uptown.
Okay, you're talking about Cloverdale over there.
Yes.
All right. Yeah.
In 1935, Detroit City Ice and Fuel got him to put up a little storage down. The building is gone now. It's down where the unfinished furniture place is there in the coffee shop.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a little storage. It held 16 ton. And they'd bring out, City Ice and Fuel would deliver ice. And they'd bring out 16 ton. Well, Twin Pines Dairy started out where Zadie's trucking company is now. And they would, they bought ice, but we'd handle about 30 ton a day from 1st of July until middle of September out of a little place that only held 15 or 16 ton. Well, that
you
took some...
You had to keep it moving.
You sure had to keep stuff moving. And I've seen the time a lot of times when we'd have the whole dock just filled of ice, 100 degree temperature, ice sitting outside.
Hmm.
Well then, starting in about this time, or a little bit before this, we'd ice sweet corn. Corn is a carbohydrate. The minute it's picked, it starts what they call a heating process. And if you allow sweet corn to dissipate the heat that starts in on this process, it becomes tougher than hell.
Yeah.
Where 25 pounds of crushed ice in a bag of 5 dozen ears, it'll dissipate that heat in 15 or 20 minutes. Sweet corn will never get tough.
Hmm.
Did you know that?
I did not know that.
See, you're learning something.
Yeah.
So, and they would take 5 to 6, 7, 8 ton of crushed ice a day. They'd come in the night.
These are the farmers you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd come in at night, take their bags of crushed ice, and we never really knew how much they took, but they'd keep track of it themselves. That was the way to do business.
Yeah.
So we kept our ice tonnage up. Oh, for 7, 8, 10 years after everyone else's ice business is gone. Clancy, my son, delivered the last 50-pound cake of ice that was ever delivered in Northville.
Uh-huh. When was that, approximately, what year?
About 1960.
1960, okay. So it hasn't been all that long ago.
Maybe it was before that, because he graduated from Ferris in 1956. It was probably long in there, instead of 60.
Yeah.
And of course, the racetrack, that was going full blast, and that would take 3 to 5 ton of ice a day.
Okay.
So there actually wasn't much of a retail business at that time, but this commercial
still
business.
Commercial stuff. Restaurants and that type of thing.
Yeah. Now what do you want to know about?
Okay. We're going to back up a little bit now.
Because
we're going to go back to your earlier childhood and growing up in Northville. You had a sister and a brother.
Uh-huh.
And you moved several times since living here in Northville. Let's see, how much difference in age? Your sister is 84, so she's 5 years older.
She's 4 years.
4 years older, okay.
Some of this information isn't just quite right that you...
Okay, now your brother Ivan was...
2 years younger.
2 years younger, and he passed away...
I think it was 61.
61, okay. Okay. Where did you attend school?
Here in Northville.
Yeah, but I mean, what school was it?
Well, wait a minute. We only had one.
Okay. So that's what I wanted you to say. There was only one school to attend.
Oh, yeah.
This was like really like a country school.
It was right down here at the end of the street. That was.
But it had several grades in one building, didn't it?
There was a building that burnt.
Yeah.
I was married in 1933.
Yeah.
That building burnt about 1936 or 7.
Yeah.
Well, the grade school.
Yeah.
It was called the grade school.
Right.
And the high school, because I started in on the 5th grade.
Yeah.
And that was the youngest, and from the 5th to the 12th, and the building is there now.
Okay, in the high school building.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, we're going to jump ahead, because you indicated on your biography that you never completed the 12th grade at the Northville High School.
That's right.
You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. There's only one person. What happened, these two boys getting they're going for football. It's long in the fall. And their locker was underneath the steps leading up from the ground floor, and underneath that down in the locker rooms, the light bulb had burned out. So they wanted to get dressed. Instead of getting a hold of their clothes and taking them into another part of the room where there was light, I sat on the floor lighting newspapers so they could get dressed. A fellow by the name of Gene Palmer, the janitor. Of course, it smoked like hell burning those newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
He opened up the door, and he could see me sitting there on the floor lighting these newspapers so these two boys could get dressed. As I say, this long in the fall.
Yeah.
And he looked in there, and I was accused for trying to set fire to the school.
Uh-huh.
And it was long until March or April that I was just politely told to get lost. I never had a chance to rebuttal or give my side of the story or nothing.
And neither one of these two fellas stepped forward in your defense?
It wasn't known.
Huh.
They didn't know anything about it.
They didn't know that you had lighted these papers?
Sure, they knew it.
Yeah.
But there was nothing said about me trying to set fire to school.
Yeah.
Wasn't a word said about it.
Yeah.
I suppose they had school board meetings and it was discussed.
Yeah.
But it wasn't common knowledge.
Huh. Well, probably that kind of thing they'd want to keep quiet. They wouldn't want to publicize that kind of thing.
As I look back now, that's correct.
Yeah.
So these two boys, they never had a chance to come to my defense.
There was never any public record of it or discussion of it.
That's correct.
Huh. Were you on the football team?
No. I played in the band.
You played in the band?
Yeah.
And they were on the team and they were getting dressed for practice?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And, but my mother knew it.
Yeah.
And she said, well, there'll be a hearing or something.
Yeah.
Which there never was.
Huh. Okay, now you said that happened in the fall of your senior year.
That's correct, but I wasn't kicked out until long in, it was March or April, long in there.
It's kind of funny that it would be hanging all that time.
All that time.
Fall into winter into spring.
That's right.
And
I thought about that lots of times.
And here you are almost ready to graduate, and then you say they tell you, in effect, get lost.
That's right.
And did they ever offer you a way of getting your high school diploma?
No.
Nothing.
I was just expelled.
Huh.
Period.
Boy, that's unusual. That's unusual. I happen to have been in the school business myself. I'm a retired high school assistant
principal.
Well,
then you probably know more about the ramifications of what led up to it.
Yeah, see, that wouldn't happen today. Today there would be some kind of a hearing and, you know, and I'm given an opportunity to speak in your own defense. But that's kind of getting off the subject.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so now here you are, a 17-year-old.
Smartest guy that was ever in Northville.
Smartest boy in Northville. So now what happens? You're 17 years old. You can't go to school. So what happens now?
Well, as I say, my dad told me to put the car in the garage. I was all through with that, and start paying my mother $10 a week, room and board.
Yeah.
And I walked all over Northville. Nobody wanted to hire a smartest guy in Northville. But I just forget. There was long in there sometime that I worked down to the old Globe furniture factory.
Yeah.
9 cents an hour. And come to find out, they were on their last legs and they didn't need a boy. But my dad paid my wages down there.
Oh.
He said...
Was this while you were still in school? You were working there part-time?
You know, I can't recall.
Yeah.
It could have been a summer that I came back from Ferris. I was there for 3 years.
Yeah.
1 year finishing my high school, and then 2 years of business administration. But it was long in there sometime that I worked down to Globe.
Yeah.
And I did find out that my dad paid my wages.
Hmm.
Because they didn't, they didn't need me.
Yeah. You were doing kind of janitorial work then.
Well, I know one time I come back and I said, well, Dad, I worked in the office today. And he's all smiles, but he come to find out what I was working in the office for, I was washing the windows.
That's what you mean by working in the office.
Okay, so now here you are, 17 years old, trying to find a job. Nobody had, there weren't any jobs available in town. You've got to pay your mom room and board. Your car's been put up because you lost that privilege.
That's right.
So what do you do now?
Well, that's when I got this job at Walt's Garage. And I know it was along the first part of May. He said, well, you tell Mr. Tuck to get himself another boy, that you're coming back, pedal ice, and then I'm going to take you up to Big Rapids at Ferris Institute this fall.
Okay, Tuck was the owner of Walt's Garage.
Oh, yeah, Walt Tuck.
Okay, now what kind of work did you do for him?
Well, just what a boy would do.
Okay, so you weren't actually doing maintenance work then?
No. You mean...
repair work.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I didn't know much more than a screwdriver from a pair of pliers.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'd keep... I had to keep coal in the... so the... they'd fire the furnace.
Yeah.
And see that there's coal in there to bank it for
yeah.
that night.
Yeah.
Keep oil that was spilled on the floor, keep it cleaned up.
Yeah.
And just picking up tools.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And I know the only time Walt Tuck got mad at me, I had my lunch hour. And, I'd clear off a spot on the counter, on the desk there. It was on the east side of the building. The sun would kind of shine in there. I'd have my lunch, and then I'd get a pair of coveralls or something, and I'd take a little nap. And he tried to get me to do something on my lunch hour, and I wouldn't do it. I always had to have a nap.
Yeah.
But I sure had a lot of nice relationship with Walt Tuck.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now let.
And then I told him, he said, well, that's before he had any boys.
Yeah.
He's got two boys. And now run the place. And when I told him that, I was going to quit in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And my dad sent me to school. He said, I'll do that.
He yeah.
said, you don't have to do that. No, I said, I'm tired of this working.
Anyway. Yeah.
So I think one of the main reasons my dad wanted me to come back home, I had 17 blind pigs on the ice route.
You had 17 blind pigs?
Sure. And you'd take care of them twice a day.
Yeah.
Up and down 7 to 8 mile road, clear over to 5 mile road, across Farmington Road, and in Norfolk.
Yeah.
And but I could make them all the same day.
Yeah.
Where it was a little difficult to get other men to be able to do that.
Yeah. So you were a hustler then?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was clear up to the 4th of July. And I kept telling Mr. Tuck that I had to get back to Northville pedaling ice.
Yeah.
And he kept stalling me off. And as I say, he's paying me $25 a week at that time. So, the week of 4th of July, I think the 4th was on a long in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
And he'd hired a boy the week before.
Yeah.
And so I told him, I said, no, this next week you've got this boy coming in. I'll work for nothing. You
yeah.
don't have to pay me that week.
Yeah.
Because I'll be showing him the what to do and how to do it when they know it.
Right.
So it came the 4th of July, and he and Jim Travis, his right-hand man, had planned on big doings on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
So I get there, and there was going to be no mechanical work, because I wasn't capable of that.
Yeah.
But they'd be oil changing, pumping gas, and fixing tires. This boy never showed up. In desperation, I call my brother, and he comes up to help me.
Yeah.
And we worked all day the 4th, and I don't know how much money we took in. So come the next morning, Walt says, "How'd you make out?" "Just fine." Well, of course, the boy was there that day.
Yeah.
Everything was just fine. Come Saturday night, I said, "Well, goodbye, Mr. and Mrs. Tuck." Well, he said, "Just hold on a minute here." So they give the boy his, and I don't know what that boy's name was now.
Yeah.
But through the week, he'd asked me how much money I was making.
Yeah.
And so he gets his paycheck, and it was $6, or $10.
Yeah.
Well, the boy said, "I'm not going to work for that much money."
Yeah.
And Walt says, "Forget it then." And so I said, "Well, goodbye." And he said, "Just a minute." And he said, "Here's your pay." And I said, "Well, I told you I was going to work for nothing." "Well," he said, "I know what happened. Your brother was up helping you." He said, "This boy here, he wasn't even there."
Yeah.
"You didn't say a word about it." And he said, "Here's $5 for your brother." And he gave me, I had 3 weeks' pay.
Mm-hmm.
$75, more money than I'd ever seen before in my life. And that's end of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he said, "I've got somebody coming Monday morning." He said, "Go ahead."
So he found somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
He said, this boy's father's been after me for a year.
Yeah.
To give him a job. He said, "I knew he was no damn good."
Yeah.
But we sure did a lot of nice business with Walt Tuck for later years.
Good. Is he still alive?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No. No. He died here 2 or 3 years ago.
Uh-huh. Okay, and his sons run the business?
Oh, yes.
Is it still called Walt's Garage?
Novi Auto Parts.
Okay, that's the one. Okay.
Novi Auto Parts.
Novi Auto is what used to be Walt's Garage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Walt Tuck came from New Hudson.
Uh-huh.
New Hudson, I think so.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, let's talk. You feel like talking a little bit more?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so now your dad wants you to come back and go into business with him. In fact, you mentioned that your two brothers went in with your dad as partners. How old were you then?
About 20, 21 maybe.
Okay.
I married when I was 23.
Okay.
Well, I met my wife at Ferris.
Uh-huh.
That's where I met her.
Okay. Okay, so you were up at Ferris 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That'd be 28, 29, and 30.
Did you get some kind of a degree, associate degree or something?
I think I did.
Okay, so the first year was to complete your high school education.
That's right.
The next 2 years were
business administration.
Business administration. Okay.
And Clancy, I knew from the day he was born where he was going to go to school.
Yeah.
And what he was going to take up. He's a much better education than I. He has a degree in higher accounting.
Uh huh.
Never worked a day at it.
Uh huh.
Just I think it was a pretty fair education.
Okay, now Clancy's your son, so you had pretty high regard for Ferris then.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I still, of course, it was known in those days for his druggist. I would say 90% of the druggists in the state of Michigan at that particular time were graduates of Ferris Institute.
Of Ferris. Okay.
Ferris Institute.
Ferris Institute. Okay. Okay. Now it's Ferris College, so I believe. I think it's considered to be a college now.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah. I know it's a college.
Yeah.
Or it's a university.
Yeah, I think it has a four-year program. I don't know that they have any master's programs. I really don't know whether they do or not. But okay, now, is Clancy running the business now?
Oh, he's a wholly owned owner.
He's the head honcho.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. I'd like to get back to a comment you made earlier that you had a number of blind pigs on your route. were the police aware of these blind pigs?
And for
they just,
sure.
And they just kind of overlooked them?
About once a month they'd come in and smash hell out of everything.
Yeah.
But you see, it was illegal. You know what a blind pig is?
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
Well, these people that were running them, someone had to take care of them. There was no such thing as welfare in those days.
Yeah.
It was the king's daughters would take care of things, and the city of Northville would do things, but these people became self-sustaining.
Yeah.
And if they didn't cause too much problem, why, they let them go.
Because it was a source of income for them.
Yes.
Yeah, keep them off welfare.
That's about what it amounted to.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Okay, so it was just something that was kind of allowed to exist and don't make too much noise about it.
Then. That's correct. But, oh God, those are good old days. And you know, it's kind of a crying shame. Maybe you better turn that thing off.
All right. Okay, we've been talking a little bit while the tape was off, and I mentioned Mr. Ely that I wanted to get back to his early days in the coal and ice, the Ely coal and ice business. How old were you when you first started to work for your dad in the coal and ice business?
Well, probably 12 years old.
Okay.
12.
And, okay, and you were involved in the delivery of coal and ice?
Well, of course, I didn't do much. My first recollection was in the spring, sitting on a ice wagon seat to hold the horses because they weren't used to standing.
Yeah.
And while the man was delivering the ice, and sometimes he'd depend on just where it was. Sometimes he'd take longer than he should have.
Yeah.
But that's something else.
Yeah.
And it'd take a couple of weeks to be there to hold the horses. And then we'd go back doing what I most boys do at that
yeah.
age.
Yeah.
Along with about, when I'm about 15 or 16, these fellows I'm talking about, Pell and Ice, they didn't know anything about driving a truck.
Yeah.
So my dad would start buying old Model T's, and I knew how to drive a truck, and would I got where I was working all summer.
Uh-huh.
I don't ever recall being paid for it. I probably got something.
Yeah.
Well, then by the time I'm 17 or 18, I would have an ice route all my own, and that's when I go to these blind pigs.
Yeah, okay. Okay, now, the ice originally was cut from the mill pond.
That's right.
Okay, just where was the mill pond?
Well, it's still there.
Yeah.
And the ice house, where they put up the ice, I think that's the expression,
Yeah.
Is where the historical village is.
Okay.
And there was a little bridge going across the creek.
Yeah.
And but that second year, the first year my dad was there, that ice was all put up.
Yeah.
But the next year, there was just no cold weather.
Yeah.
And they had a hell of a time.
Yeah. Then you had to go out and buy ice from another source.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
They used to call it the Abspure.
Abspure?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Is that still in existence?
I think it still is, yeah. Yeah, I think I'm familiar with that name, Abspure.
So then he built his own ice house, produced ice, up until about 30. And then the Detroit City Ice and Fuel would sell him ice cheaper than what, and better product than what he was producing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1935, moved down where the donut scene and the unfinished furniture
right.
is. Yeah. He had a little plant there. Well, not a plant, just a storage.
Right.
And that was there until I forget. We built that building, and it's there now.
Right.
Through the war. And it was for my brother was in the Navy. It was for him, and we got a electrical franchise, Norge franchise.
Uh-huh.
But when he came home, we had it pretty well stocked, but we weren't in there. And he wanted no part of it.
Yeah.
All he thought about the 4 years he was in the Navy was coming home, peddling ice and shoveling.